This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. I am joined today in the JPR studios by singer-songwriter Ron Sexsmith. Ron, welcome to JPR.
Thank you.
You are originally from St. Catharines, Ontario, correct?
That's true, yeah.
Which is, for those of us who are geographically challenged, this is very close to Buffalo, New York.
Just on the other side, yeah. We used to go as a kid, you know, my first concert was in Buffalo, St. Elton John, so most of the shows, you know, we would go there instead of Toronto. Yeah, sort of Niagara region, I guess you could say. You know.
What kind of a town are we talking about?
At the time, well, it's a small town. At the time, you know, it was paper mills, and we had a couple car factories and Hayes Dana and stuff like this. So it was kind of booming. You know, it's fallen on hard times, I think, like a lot of places. Yeah. Although I think it's trying to come back now. But it's just, it was a great place to grow up, and it was great hearing the music. At the time I was growing up on the radio, you know, the music was so melodic, and a lot of that was coming from Buffalo, I think, you know.
What kind of a kid were you? What kind of interest did you have as a youngster?
Music, really. Yeah. I was a music freak at a very early age. My mother let me play her 45s, I think, which belonged to my dad, who wasn't really in the picture, you know. So it was sort of my way of getting to know my dad. And a lot of doo-wop and country 45s and some, you know, some great stuff. And also, again, you know, the radio was on all the time. You know, there was a time of the transistor radio. So you'd be playing road hockey, and then there'd be a transistor radio on the curb. So it was like a soundtrack at all times, and in the car, of course, you know. So, but I was mostly into music, you know. There was a time I wanted to be a detective, but I think most kids think about that at some point, you know.
At what point did you start making music?
Well, kind of in stages, you know. When I was about 14, my friends and I had a band called Paper Moon. You know, we didn't know how to play at all, like literally. And but we started writing songs then. But I don't know if you could even call them songs. We had one called Prehistoric Lady, for example. They're just terrible. It wasn't really until I was 21 and my son was born. He was about 2 months old. And I wrote the song called Speak with the Angel that quite a few years later, led to a publishing deal and then a record deal with Interscope. Hmm. And then the pressure was on, you know, once I had the first album out to try to, you know, be consistent.
Yeah, and now it's been, what, over 20 years now, right?
Yeah, this year, actually.
Congratulations.
It marks the 20th anniversary of my first record, so thank you.
Did you think you'd be here?
No, because it started off so badly, you know. I mean, my album, when I made it with Mitchell Froom, you know, came out on Interscope, which was a strange label for me to be on. When you think about at the time, it was Marilyn Manson, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Nine Inch Nails, you know,
sure.
And then me all of a sudden. And they really didn't know what to do with me. I could never understand why they even wanted me in the first place. And so when my album was finished, of course, everyone hated it at the label. And they sort of put it out reluctantly. And it just died a slow death in North America. And it really didn't. And I was just on the verge of being dropped when Elvis Costello held it up on the cover of a magazine, which forced them to invest, and they released it overseas, you know. And that's where I found my audience.
Now, was it really that they hated it, or did they just really not know how to market it because it was so different than everything else on the imprint?
Well, not everybody hated it, but the people at the top hated it, you know, without naming names. I mean, my publisher, for example, who was kind of my hero, he's the guy that signed me and made it all happen. He was really, I think he was hoping I was going to be more like a Bruce Hornsby kind of a California kind of sound, or a little bit slicker perhaps, you know. But I was never really, you know, I'm a Kinks fan. I like things that were slightly a bit off kilter, you know. But so he was very disappointed in the record that I made with Mitchell, and so was Jimmy Iovine, who thought it sounded like Swordfish Trombones, you know, which it sounds nothing like Swordfish. And, you know, and that was actually a compliment, because I'm a huge Tom Waits fan. But certainly there were people at the label, and actually one of the people was a woman named Ann Brubaker, who was the head of international, and she was largely responsible for getting my record out overseas and finding, you know, helping me find an audience.
So. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about how your audience developed in different locations, because
sure.
You just referenced overseas, and certainly it took a different speed and a different growth pattern there than it did here in the States and in Canada.
Yeah.
But first, let's hear a tune. What do you want to play first?
Oh, well, I guess I'll play, you know, something from the new record. I thought this one called Sun's Coming Out. Sun's coming out above the hillside, chasing the shadows down through.
through the valley, sun's coming out, heading for easy times, and bathe in the sad old town in a warm embrace from a higher place. Hope's peeking out behind those iron clouds and breaking the shackles of what used to be. Love speaking out where it was not allowed, and straight for the back roads of adversity. Sun's coming out. I, we decide what is right for us. The blue sky and the fields unite in a bright chorus of love and light and beauty. Sun's coming out. Well, the sun's coming out to heal what is below, and change in the shadow of doubt with certainty. Time's running out. Well, my love, you know, it feels like it has been dark for an eternity. Sun's coming out. Sun's coming out. Ooh. And new day has begun.
That is Ron Sexsmith live here on Jefferson Public Radio. It's a tune from the new record called Carousel One. That one out on Compass Records. Information at ronsexsmith.com. So just before the tune, I referenced this different pacing that your audience had in terms of growth overseas, here in the States, in Canada. It seemed like, at least at first, there was a bit more growth and a bit more recognition of your work over across the pond. Is that true?
Yeah. It was actually the UK and, you know, in Ireland that first noticed me. I mean, when Elvis, at the time, he held the album up on, it was like December of 95, I think, on the cover of Mojo magazine. And, you know, at that time, I think it was like the shot heard around the world, you know.
Did you know that was even coming?
No, I had no idea. Huh. And at the time, I was, you know, in kind of hot water with the label. They weren't sure if I was going to get to make a second album. And all, I mean, it was, and I thought I'd blown my big chance, you know. And so when that happened, all of a sudden, I found myself going to all these places I'd never really been before. And the thing about the UK, you know, all my favorite music originally came from there. And so all of a sudden I was meeting all my heroes and they were saying nice things about me. And I remember even in Canada, I would tour that album and a lot of people, because all the press was coming from over there, thought I was actually from there, you know, originally. But it's kind of come around, you know, where I do quite well in Canada now. America's, you know, for a lot of artists, it's always the hardest market. I don't know why. Maybe it's just, it's so competitive or so big or something.
Saturation.
And I've never had much luck in terms of commercial radio, you know, so I'm still relatively unknown here. You know, we've been touring. I mean, I do well in some of the major centers, but over there where, you know, for England, for example, we just headlined at Royal Albert Hall, which is just beyond belief, right?
Yeah.
To go from that and then, you know, you're playing it for 200 people somewhere, you know, so so it's very humbling, and I'm just grateful mostly to have a career at all.
You know? Yeah. It's interesting that you have those different levels of success in different areas, because since the Elvis Costello thing, you know, which is now 20 years ago, the lineup of fans of Ron Sexsmith is pretty darn impressive. I mean, you just have to admit, it's pretty darn impressive when among your fans are Paul McCartney and Elton John and Chris Martin and Feist and on and on and on.
Yeah.
How does that resonate with you to have such high-profile fans that all publicly announce and appreciate what you do?
Well, initially, it was great because I didn't have much else going for me, you know, so that was this thing I could sort of hang my hat on. And also the press in general has been pretty positive, you know, so that helped. But, you know, some of it gets a little embarrassing because McCartney, for example, I don't think there's ever been an article where they don't mention him. But I can't honestly say if he's a fan. I mean, I think early on around the time when I met him, he said, I think, something nice somewhere. And I don't think he's ever said anything since, you know, but that always comes up, you know.
So you don't think he's sitting around waiting for the new album to drop?
I don't really honestly think he's followed my, you know, my career. I mean, one time we were playing LA and we got a call from his people that he wanted to be on the guest list. And that was, you know, about 7 years ago or something, 8 years ago. But again, you know, I don't know what he thinks about me. I mean, certainly Elvis Costello, I've toured with him and he's kept in touch. And Elton John is at different points in my career, like you sending me Christmas cards for a bit. And I mean, you know, as a kid, I was a member of the Elton John fan club, you know, and I just, my whole wall was Elton. So that's surreal. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's all, it helps for sure, you know, I mean, but it hasn't really helped in terms of record sales or anything like that, you know.
You know, earlier we were talking about how you were a little out of place on Interscope, that first record deal you had. One thing that I have noticed and pulled out of a number of interviews that you have done, and I hope I'm not wrong in this, is that you seem to have an affinity, a really in-depth, knowledgeable affinity for the Great American Songbook.
Yes.
You reference folks like Johnny Mercer and Hoagy Carmichael, and you've referenced songs like Pennies from Heaven.
Yeah.
And I hear shades of that in your music, in that the melodies are a little more complex. They're, you know, they go different places than a lot of quote-unquote pop music does now. Do you listen to a lot of that or just intimately know it? I know early on you did a lot of covers as a musician.
Well, actually, on a side note, I mean, I have a channel on YouTube where I've done over 300 cover songs, not just the American Songbook, but just the 20th century of song. But I do, you know, Johnny Mercer and Cole Porter, as well as, you know, I do the Ramones, I do, you know, everybody, because I just love songwriting so much. I do know that music very well. And, you know, my favorite singer has been Crosby, and I think he introduced a lot of that music to the America, obviously, in the world. You know, and I kind of worked myself back, because obviously as a kid, I loved pop radio and country music. And then just getting further into it and just being really curious about songwriting, I did go back and I wanted to hear all the great writers and the stuff that Sinatra was recording. And you know, and I used to get up at piano bars and sing all those songs. It's sort of in my DNA because I think it's a lost art in a way. And I feel, you know, I mean, there's people like Randy Newman, who I love, that he obviously carried that forward, you know, and just the kind of structure and the point of view and all that. I don't know. I feel like I make an antique table sometimes, you know.
They're sort of songs about things.
Yeah.
And about emotions that are a little bit more complex than a lot of pop music.
Right. No, exactly. And I was 31 when my first album came out, so, which isn't old, but I already felt old in the context of the music industry. I never wanted to write about anything frivolous, you know. I just wanted, all my heroes wrote about substantial things. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not to sound self-important or anything, but you know, I wanted to write about love in a way that was grown up, you know, and I love, you know, my share of bubblegum music and all that stuff too. But even the stuff I was hearing as a kid, you know, you'd hear Bill Withers, and it wasn't music for kids, you know, but it still moved you. And even though you didn't always maybe get what the subject matter or something, it wasn't talking down to you. And so I've tried in my own music just to be be relevant, you know, to myself, you know.
Yeah. Ron Sexsmith is my guest today, live in the JPR studios. His newest record out on Compass is called Carousel One. Information on the album and on Ron at ronsexsmith.com. Will you do us another?
Yeah. Well, I think you have this Cobblestone Runway over there on the table, so maybe I'll play something from that, if that's all right.
Your eyes are burning low as you look out on this morning. but your eyes will return to their former glory. Though the cold north wind may blow, it's all sound and fury, and the summer will return in its former glory. Everything will be just like you remember. Today won't look as bad as it seems. And though love's become a dying ember, it will burn brighter than you ever dreamed. For the day is coming soon, you don't have to worry. Your light will return in its former glory. Just like you remember, today won't look as bad as it seemed. Though love's become a dying ember, it will burn brighter than you ever dreamed. For the day is coming soon, you don't have to worry. Your light will return in its former glory. Well, your light will return. The summer will return, and your heart will rise again in its former glory.
That is Ron Sexsmith live here on Jefferson Public Radio. His new record is called Carousel One, out on Compass Records. RonSexsmith.com is the place to go for information. Let's talk a little bit about the new record,
okay.
Carousel One.
Yeah.
This is literally named after a luggage carousel in an airport I'm guessing you have spent a lot of time in over the years.
Yeah, well, at LAX, you know, in fact, the last three records I've made in California, so there's always this ritual of flying from Air Canada, you know, on Air Canada to LA. And bags almost always come out in Carousel One. So it's just this thing, you get off the plane and you just, you know, you don't even have to look at the at the board, you know. So, and the thing is, I had a title that I really liked, that which was featuring Pitbull, was my original title, you know. You know, the rapper.
Yeah.
But because I didn't know who he was, but I kept seeing on all these records featuring Pitbull. So I thought I'd call my album featuring Pitbull. But then the people at the label thought there might be a legal, you know, some gray area. And I was really discouraged. And so anyway, I went back to do overdubs on this record. And I'm standing there at the carousel, looking at the signs of Carousel One. And it just sort of hit me. I thought, you know, that has kind of a nice ring to it. And I just think on how my life kind of goes around, you know, and all our emotional baggage and everything. So it just became and I bounced it off Jim Scott, who produced the record, and he liked it instantly. So, yeah.
Well, your last few records, you have literally bounced back and forth between kind of a bigger, poppier rock sound and a scaled-down, more troubadour style.
Yeah.
That can't help with placement of where Ron Sexsmith should be in the musical world.
Probably not. I don't really think about that so much when I'm, you know, for me it's all about the songs.
I don't think you're supposed to think about it, right?
No.
That's for all of us to try to determine after the fact.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, too, I'm not a producer, so for me, I just try to find the right fit. You know, you have these songs, like I did an album with Bob Rock a few years ago, which, as it turned out, was one of my most successful records, you know. And, you know, needless to say, his production is quite different from Mitchell Froom. You know, it was very, very present, very big and polished. You know, it was auto-tuned. And as a result, I got on the radio in the UK, had two top 10 hits. And So naturally, there were a lot of people who said, why don't you just work with Bob again, you know? Yeah. But the songs I had for my next album, Forever and Ever, were more ballad heavy, and I didn't think they would survive that kind of thing, you know? So I went back to Mitchell Froom, who is probably my favorite producer, you know, and not to knock any of the people I've worked with. They've all been great. But we have just a good working relationship, you know? But yeah, I just really follow my heart. I go where the songs seem to be leading me. Mm.
There is another opportunity that people have to learn a lot about you. How did you end up being the subject of a documentary?
Yeah, well, it was actually about the making of Long Player Late Bloomer, as it turned out. I mean, this fellow, Doug Arrowsmith in Canada, he was a budding filmmaker. He started following me around about 7 years prior to the release of the movie. And I honestly didn't think it would ever come out, you know, because he didn't have any money. He would show up when I least expected him to show up and just get little snippets of things. And originally it was all about me playing my favorite venue, Massey Hall in Toronto. It was my dream. And so when I finally played Massey Hall, he filmed the whole show, and I thought, well, great, there's your movie. You know, there's your happy ending. But he kept filming. And then at the time, I was going through a bit of a depression in terms of where my career was at. And so when Bob Rock came on board to do that record, that became the story. And finally, there was a producer that got on board, and they had money. And so then they were just there all the time, which was kind of a drag, actually. They filmed the whole session. So anyway, that's what happened, and the movie came out just a few days ahead of the album. I thought it was going to kill my career, to be honest, but people seem to actually like it. I still don't get it.
Well, the new record is a wonderful collection of songs.
Thank you.
We love it here. There is one lyric, I have to admit, that made me laugh out loud when I first heard it.
Okay.
Which is your use of four-legged minibar.
Oh, yeah.
from the song St. Bernard.
That was a fun one to write.
Is that really your favorite dog, or was that written from another person's perspective?
No, it's always been my favorite. I don't have a dog, but I've always gravitated towards St. Bernard. There used to be a show when I was a kid called George, I think, as well, that I think started my love of just the look of them. And I think as I get older, the more I look like one, you know. I got the cheeks, I got rings under my eyes. So I just relate to it in a sort of like a spirit animal kind of way. So it was just a fun song. To write, you know. I mean, who doesn't like St. Bernard's, you know?
Ron Sexsmith is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record is called Carousel One. You can get information at ronsexsmith.com. You mind playing us one last tune to finish up today?
Yeah, I'll do St. Bernard since we're talking about it.
There's a portrait on my wall of my only friend, a comfort whenever I call, on whom I can depend. In my imaginary backyard, I have a Saint Bernard. Oh my Lord, in my big backyard, la 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 la. Dispatches from the pound I receive in my dreams, with patches of white and brown, that's a real color scheme. And life wouldn't seem so hard if I had a Saint Bernard. Oh my Lord, wouldn't be so hard. La 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 la. Rescue me when I'm face down in the snow. No other dog looks more like me than could fill in when I'm ill and unable to make the show. My imaginary backyard, there's a flask around his neck of brandy for me. to sip on as I reflect on immortality like a four-legged mini bar. I'm talking Saint Bernard. On all fours, he's my mini bar. La 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 la. I'm talking Saint Bernard.
That is Saint Bernard. It's Ron Sexsmith live today on Jefferson Public Radio. It's a tune from the new record called Carousel One. Information online, ronsexsmith.com. Ron, it has been a real pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. I mean, we were on our way anyway, you know.